Systems initiated. You're listening to the Empire Podcast Network.
As an actor, I made a career out of surviving personal and family dramas on daytime television. Now, in real life, I've also had my fair share of challenges, just like everybody else. But TV and film can be a nice escape from our own daily struggles. Well, let's face it, life is not TV and film. Yeah, it's time to keep it real. With Real Conversations with Jacob Young, sponsored by Boys Town.
My guest this week is an Emmy Award-winning actor who's been a TV favorite, well, for some decades, I have to say. He was on the NBC classic soap Passions, but since 2008, he's lived in the fictional town of Salem in his Emmy Award-winning role of Brady Black on Days of Our Lives. He's also a talented musical theater star who has toured in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Fans of Southern California will get a chance to see him again on the stage next month in the hit musical Mamma Mia. My guest this week is my friend Eric Martzoff. You know what time it is. It's time to keep it real with Real Conversations with Jacob Young, sponsored by Boys Town.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Iconic. Of course, I got to throw back the old school one.
Extra verses in there.
Yeah, it's not bad. How are you doing, Eric?
That song, man, they haven't changed much. It's still that hourglass up there. They don't mess around. They're like, we don't need to see your faces, we don't need to see your names, we just need to see that hourglass, and that's the way we're gonna do it. So yeah. That's great. Thanks for playing that, Jake. I appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Dude, I'm so glad you're on the show this week.
It's great to be here. I'm happy that you have this forum and you have some terrific guests. And I understand you have more terrific guests to come. So I'm in good company. So
well, thanks for having me. Yeah, you are one of those terrific guests, and I'm so appreciative. And we've been friends for a long time now, and I just really treasure every moment that I get to spend with you, even if we have to do it through Zoom like this.
It's the best we got, right? You're on the East Coast, I'm West, but we have this.
We got this. It's great, you know? Man. I don't even know what we would, going back in time, I always go, how do we get by without having this wonderful face-to-face opportunity when we, through Zoom or these other technologies on our apps, on our phones? It's amazing. Blows my mind.
How did our parents even find us when we were like teenagers? With like no cell phones, even before pagers.
I don't know. My parents must have been like, I'm sure he's fine. He's got to be okay, right?
Mom, I'm going to see Empire Strikes Back in town, downtown. Like, okay, I hope you get back.
You riding your bike? Yeah. Are you walking?
Yeah, what are you doing? I'll probably take my big wheel. It's like 10 miles, Eric. it's going to be fun, though.
Just see how fast I can do those 10 miles. No, I mean, truly, isn't that's something that's such a big generation gap of today. I mean, obviously, as a parent yourself of two beautiful, stunning twin boys who are the epitome of you and your missus. I mean, just beautiful, just gorgeous, gorgeous kids. But, you know, to allow your kids, like, I would disappear for the whole day. What about you when you were a kid? Did you just like...
I lived in a small neighborhood, so they had that going for it. It was kind of hard to get out of the neighborhood, but when those street lights went on, that was when we were supposed to come home. There was no time dictated. There was no rule other than when those lights pop on, get your butt home because it's dinner time. And my family, my mom always, she served dinner like around 9 p.m. She was one of those like, I'm still cooking. I'm still, you know, so I would just eat late. I ate late for my entire life. So I did a lot of playing. We were out in the woods, building forts, cutting down trees, making teepees, having rivalry wars with the guys in the forts. And we would throw rocks at each other.
Oh, man.
We would like sneak up and like whip rocks at each other. Sometimes we get hit. We come home bleeding. My mom would be like, just sit down and finish your dinner. You can put a Band-Aid on that later. It was just a whole, it was Pennsylvania, man. It was like survival of the fittest, and set me up for this industry. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, those are the days. I have this mental picture of you like on a Huffy as mercury vapor lights are popping on behind you as you're like going, mom's going to be mad this time. I'm going to be late for dinner.
I wanted that Huffy. I had a buddy that had a Huffy. I never got that damn Huffy.
Yeah, man.
I had like a Schwinn or something. It was not cool, but didn't matter.
What was life like for you growing up?
It wasn't bad. I'd love to tell a tale of the hardships that I had as a kid, you know, growing up, and, you know, I just had to beat the odds, but I had two beautiful parents. So I lost recently this year, both of them in a span of 4 months. And they've been on my mind every day for a while now. And I've been doing a lot of nostalgic reminiscing about the way they brought me up. And they were there. They were always there. My dad was a lawyer, but he always made time to, whether it was coaching me in baseball or getting me to those rehearsals for Grease or My Fair Lady in high school. There was never an excuse. And there was never a time, you know, the 80s movies where the kid's on stage and they look out and the seat is empty and they, you know, start to, why isn't dad there? Why isn't mom there? I don't relate to that, because no matter what was going on in their lives, they were always there to support whatever the heck I was doing. And they weren't theatrical people. My dad didn't understand what the heck I was. He's like, you're going to be in My Fair Lady. What is this? But he came and he enjoyed it and he smiled and he's like, I don't know what you're doing up there, but it's brilliant. Life was good, Jacob. It was not a struggle. And I owe my parents for that. You know, we were not extremely well off. We were not poverty stricken. We were just making ends meet and comfortable. Yeah. It was always comfortable. I never felt like, oh my God, there's not going to be any food on the table. There was, and it was always cooked and it was always hot and it was always tasty, and life was good. They were good parents, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, I was unaware of the fact that you lost your parents, and I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, I didn't mean to bring that up.
No. Right. I mean, first of all, thank you for being so open about that. But my heart goes out to you, and thank you for sharing that. I mean, obviously, they sounds like they were amazing folks, and you know.
Well, the beautiful thing about it is, not to cut you off, it's this romantic tragedy, Jacob. It's my mom got pancreatic cancer last summer. She told me about it. I knew what the diagnosis was. I knew what the deal was. And she left me in February of this year. And then my dad, 4 months later, from a heart attack. And
it was a broken heart.
He was heartbroken. You know, they say you have a heavy heart from sorrow. That's actually a real biological thing. They've opened people up, and you've seen the biology of the heart. Actually, the muscles take on too much. And my mom and dad met when they were 14 years old. They were high school. They were little sweethearts up in Northern Michigan. And I have pictures of them at a dance where my mom is actually holding her hand out. My dad is taking her hand, and they can't be more than 14, 15 years old. They lived for one another, and they didn't. I knew that my dad didn't really want to do anything other than be with my mom when he lost her. I mean, there were so many things I wanted to show him. Number one, I wanted him to see my boys play water polo. I was like, dad, you got to see what these dudes do in the pool. You know, you're going to be a proud grandpa. But there was no martini. There was no sunset. There was nothing in this life that filled him up more than my mom.
Your mom.
So he didn't want to be here without her, and he willed it, and it just kind of happened.
Well, God bless them, man. That's the kind of love that we all search for.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they created you, and do you have that same sort of relationship with your missus? Do you think, does it carry on?
I mean, I think it's different. My, my dad was definitely from the old school of like, whatever you want, Nancy. Hey, man. Yes, ma'am. You know, yes, ma'am. I'm good. Whatever you want. Yeah. Lisa and I are a little different. Like I'm a Leo. She's a Taurus, and we kind of, you know, we rip each other up a little. Like we have our, you know, my way or the highway kind of thing going on. So it is a very passionate relationship. It's not always happy-go-lucky. She's an only child. She is pretty stubborn, as most Tauruses are. Mm-hmm. But
the bull. Taurus is the bull, right?
She's a bull, man. And but that's also what I love about her. She is not a yes girl. She is I want to show you my way, you know, and we do butt heads. But I love that about her. At the end of the day, man, she is tough as nails and she is going to stick up for what she believes is right. And if you don't have a challenge in a relationship, it ain't going to last that long. You have to have some fire and some passion. She's Filipino-Russian.
Well, that's some fire right there.
And you put that together in a blender, man. It just bursts in flames. You know, it's just amazing. But we have a very different relationship. I wouldn't say it's very similar to my parents, but the passion is similar.
I mean, that's what, you know, I think about the like, sort of the Italians, like, you know, fighting. It's because you love each other so much. You know, there's a passion behind it. Like if you get in an argument, I mean, I'm not talking about like a knockdown, you know, breaking walls and doors, but that passion in life, that's so part of that deep, deep love.
Yeah, dude, why do you think these shows that we've been a part of for so long, these daytime dramas have existed for 50 plus years? It's not because it hasn't been 53 years of people walking hand in hand, eating chocolate covered strawberries, taking bubble baths.
You know, it was some of that.
You know, of course there's some of that, but you gotta have the boom, da da boom, da. You gotta have the fall and then the ascension back to why you want to be together. People love that comeback story. And that's essentially what soaps are. Knock them down, pick them back up. You know, and we love to watch that.
Well, speaking of like shows, NBC's Passions, which was actually the last new soap opera created for the U.S. daytime TV, the show became a cult classic. What do you think made that show so special?
I'll tell you, I got a perfect answer for that. I know exactly what made that show. And I don't know if you know this or not, but James Riley, he was the scribe. He was the writer for Days of Our Lives at the time. And he decided to do this crazy possession story when Marlena Evans got possessed by the devil. And it was met with some reluctance at the time. This was in the 80s. They're like, whoa, we're doing what? Well, ratings went through the roof.
Yeah.
So NBC approached James Riley and said, listen, man, this is kind of crazy and kooky, but can you write an entire show with this kind of supernatural element? Because people want to see more of this. That's how Passions was born. And that's how I thank God that possession storyline came about, or otherwise I may never have seen the daytime light, but that's what happened. That was it. And
no, it was a cool show, man. I remember.
You like it? Did you like it?
Well, you know, when Passions was just starting, I was working on The Bold and the Beautiful. I was 17 and I would, you know, we had a limited amount of TV channels in those days. We had three if the antenna was right.
That works, and that was it.
but I would, it was always like, I forget what it was coming on at the same time as Bold and the Beautiful or something, or no, it was like Young and the Rest. I mean, what was I can't remember the schedule, but it would pop on and I would watch it and I was mesmerized by it. I was like, man, I wish I was doing that stuff. I wish I was playing those storylines.
But see, the grass is always greener, right? Because I'd be watching your program and going, that's a real soap. I like something. That's a real stuff going on. That's some drama. I even felt that way when I was asked to join Days of Our Lives, to be honest with you. I was very excited to just be a part of a traditional real soap. Not the fighting demons and, you know, going to hell in a wheelbarrow, whatever we were doing, you know, shooting great white sharks with handguns in the middle of the ocean, which is completely ridiculous.
No, but that happened.
It had its place. But I was excited to do something a little more rooted in reality. But, hey, man, our show right now, Days of Our Lives, we are going to that passion's place, man. We're resurrecting people from the dead. We're going there. We've seen some passion elements entering Days of Our Lives. So, yeah, I don't know.
You know, I mean, I just have to say, you know, kudos to Days of Our Lives, too. I mean, they just keep coming back. And hats off, of course, to, you know, everybody that's involved that just, you know, has that passion to keep it moving forward. I mean, we have very few soap operas that are left. I know when you started, when I started, there was, I don't know, 13, 14, something like that, that were still on the air every day. Oh, yeah. And, you know, the strong are still there. The strongest ones are surviving.
Thank God. Thank God. I mean, I treasure my, let's call it a soap career, for lack of a better phrase. But I was one of those guys, I never thought I'd be on a soap opera. And I've learned to truly appreciate the lifestyle that it brings, man. You know, it's when you have that role and you covet it and you protect it, it can be a wonderful means for not only providing for a family, but just going to a 9-to-5 and
having that job.
That's all my father wanted for me. I went to school to be a lawyer, man. I went to Dickinson College. My father went to Dickinson Law, and I got my pre-law degree. And he, in his credit, he was the one that told me graduation day. He's like, "You sure you want to be a lawyer right now?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "No." He's like, "Cause you do those musicals and you perform at Hershey Park and you just seem to light up when you're doing that kind of crazy." I don't get it. Like I said, but do you want to go do that for a while? I'm like, "Yeah, Dad, I do. I want to go to New York for a year.
Yeah.
Just a year. Get it out of my system. I'll get rejected, because that's what I'm told. You get rejected. And then I'll go to law school."
Yeah. You didn't get rejected.
I got rejected. What I did get was a job on a Hawaiian cruise ship singing.
Before we go there, I just want to Hershey Park. Right. Let's talk about Hershey Park for a second.
What do you want to know?
Well, how did that come about? I mean, I've been to Hershey Park. My kids have been to Hershey Park. Hershey Park is so much fun, and there's a lot of live entertainment. How did that come about?
Well, I grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So Hershey is like 15 minutes away from Harrisburg. So I grew up going to the chocolate factory and doing the park and riding Super Duper Looper and all that stuff. So when I was in high school, I did the musicals, and I realized that I do love doing this thing. As you know, you catch the bug, right?
Yeah.
And sure enough, Hershey Park auditions. My I think it was my mom. She's like, "Hey," she showed up the paper. She showed me the papers. Like, "Hershey Park is having auditions." I'm like, "Mom, that's like professional kind of." She's like, you're good, Eric. I'm like, "Yeah, but that's like a whole, I don't know." I went, I sang my Danny Zuko song. It was like the only one I knew, Alone at a Drive-In Movie. And they hired me. Oh, they hired me with one other dude. There were like 200 people that auditioned. I couldn't believe it. And next thing I knew it, I was in spandex bicycle shorts with a hot pink tank top with Converse, singing Beatles medleys in the Jukebox Theater at Hershey Park. And I did that every summer of my college career.
Oh, that is amazing.
And that was my struggle.
Does that footage exist on YouTube?
Oh yeah, it's out. Hershey Park, maybe not. I ended up doing Dollywood later, which is another theme park.
Oh yeah, I know Dollywood.
There is footage of Dollywood out there roaming around.
I just want to see you in that hot pink shirt and the Converse. I had this whole image, all this stuff. I was like, dang, I missed out.
It actually wasn't pink. It was the color. You know the cones they put up when there's construction on the street? It's that color, whatever that is.
Hunters or blaze orange.
It's like neon orange. My outfit. And I had green socks. I mean, it was out there. It was that. When did I do that? I started in 89 and I performed till 93. Yeah, it started in 89.
That's fantastic.
But it lit the fire under my butt, dude. I love the stage. I love the audience. I did 5 shows a day for 3 months, sometimes outside in the amphitheater where Harrisburg is like 90% humidity, 100 degrees. and I'm in a tux singing Gershwin music. Like, that I'm making my $250 a week and just thinking I'm on top of the world. This is the best.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. And as I mentioned in the intro, fans will have the chance to see you very, very soon in Mamma Mia, playing at the Performing Arts Center in Thousand Oaks in California. Guys, it's October 15th through the 24th. Now, it's fair to say that, you know, you've been doing drama and TV for a while, but musical theater, your first love?
That's a good question. Musical theater, as you know, is hard. I turned 50 this year, and I'm actually a little nervous about getting back into the rehearsal process. We were supposed to do Mamma Mia last July, but then this lovely COVID hit and it had to be canceled. I almost feel like I was a hell of a lot younger a year ago than I am now. And I'm like, can I still do all these dances and what Mamma Mia? Because Mamma Mia is just, it's a party. You know, it's a, you gotta be ready for it. But it's apples and oranges, Jacob. You know, I like to go through life with a big fruit basket. I don't discriminate against the different things. And I just think, I will always pursue the stage when I have a minute to do it. And it's tough because I mean, Brady Black on Days of Our Lives, he's a very busy guy. He sleeps with a lot of people. He makes a lot of bad decisions. So, you know, there's rarely the time to go do a gig like you did, man. I was so envious of the fact that you got to do Beauty and the Beast while being on a daytime show. Like, what a luxury. That was my plan, brother. That's what I wanted to do.
You know, I mean, you know, it was just... When I was offered All My Children, and Julie Carruthers, who is the executive producer, took over that show at the time, I said, look, if I'm going to go to New York, I got to make sure that I have an out, or you guys will work with me if I have the opportunity to do any kind of musical theater. And she said, yes, yes, and yes, probably thinking that I was probably never going to book a Broadway musical in my life. But that happened. And of course, you know, God bless her, she ended up honoring that, and I was able to do it. And they decided that they wanted to work me that much more while I was doing it, which was great, because it was a great cross pollination, and it was good for ABC and of course Disney. But I was dog tired. I mean, it's a lot of work doing a Broadway musical theater.
It's a grind. It is an absolute grind. And I mean, fortunately, I learned that work ethic at Hershey Park and Dollywood, where, hey, man, you do it for the love of it, and you're doing five shows a day, and these are the elements. And ever since doing those theme parks, I don't really have a tough day at work anymore. when people come to me and bitch about, I've been here for 6 hours and I got to make 2 costume changes today.
Oh, come on. You're like, I'm hey. Like,
Let me tell you a little story about Hershey Park for a second, but it's good because it set me up. It set my expectations at a good level. So I was ready for that. And I think I have the fastest quick change in Days of Our Lives history. I think the crew told me that.
Oh, really?
You get dressed quicker than anyone here. I'm like, Hershey Park.
So let me ask a little bit about this, because if viewers and listeners that don't know, NBC Days of Our Lives has an interesting shooting schedule. So when you're talking about, like, you know, making multiple wardrobe changes at Dollywood, tell us a little about what's going on and how Days of Our Lives is shot.
It's shot. It's like warfare. We have an extremely regimented schedule, and we are going full blast all the time. It's like being shot out of a cannon at this point. We're shooting about, sometimes we do 8-9 episodes a week. We were very fortunate. Our work ethic over at that studio actually paid off during the pandemic, because we had 5 months in the can. We were still airing original content when all the other soaps had to re-air their, you know, 80s classics or whatever.
Right.
We never, you know, and we were still like 4 months ahead.
That's so crazy.
I think we'd get a little carried away over there at Burbank Studios, but we shoot a lot of content in a short amount of time. And Jacob, I'm you know, I'm split about it, because sometimes I feel like our speed will compromise the work a little bit. So we've really have had to learn to work at a fast speed and be confident with what we tape and what we put out there. And honestly, everyone's got to be on their A game, because you get one shot. Double takes or two takes are frowned upon right now.
Yeah.
Like if you get the words out and they fall out of your mouth and it makes sense, they're going to buy it.
Yeah.
So you gotta be on your shit.
Yeah.
And it's not like doing any other show, man. Cause you know, how many takes you want? Let's do another one just for safety.
No.
Remember that phrase? Let's do one for safety.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist in daytime.
Yeah. Safety.
Pacino will get 40 takes. I get one, damn it. Yeah. You know, so.
Well, and I think there's also something to that, though, because, you know, if everybody's there and they know it's that one take, you know, in film, of course, and a lot of viewers don't know, because, you know, this is a multiple camera, you know, they shoot on multiple cameras on daytime. But if you're on a film, they're going to get the reverse. They're going to get this. They're going to get the close up. By the time you're done, you're doing, you know, 20 times, you know, at least maybe more. But to have that kind of energy going into the beginning, knowing like, hey, we got one shot, I think it raises the stake a little bit for the other actors and everybody involved, cameras, operators.
Most people will tell you, yeah, you, when you do the multiple takes, you lose the adrenalized version of the original, you know, feeling that you have. And it's hard when your tank is empty, it's empty. Mm-hmm. You know, and you only got so much in you when you're shooting 120 items a day. Your tank only has so much. And I have been tired. I don't know if that's just being older. That probably has something to do with it. But that combined with the schedule that we have over there and what we're asked to do, it's not for everybody.
Well, you guys are absolutely.
We got kids coming in the studio, man, that are really, they're having a hard time. Like, this is fast. Like what? Like it's really daunting.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And I've seen that even before soaps were, you know, pressured to do multiple shows in a day. You know, you see youngins come in, and I was one of those youngins, but that was back in the day when we would do a full rehearsal. We'd do a read through and, you know, and we had the time, and I was still having a hard time because I was green and I was a teenager. But you know, you thrust these other young kids in there. It's a medium that's unlike anything else that's out there, and to do it at that pace is difficult.
Where sometimes we're not even getting a rehearsal. Today we went straight to tape on probably 19 of our 20 items that I had today. And the producer, you know, God bless them, they're like, Eric, do you mind going straight to it? Let's do it. Let's rehearse on tape. Let's rehearse on tape.
Yeah. Because that's a good mental thing to throw in your head, right?
Right. I'm just screwing around.
It's a rehearsal. Yeah. But if we get it, we get it. But they're going like, he better get it.
Yeah. You're like, his butt's riding on this one.
You know, you met your wife working in the theater. And like I said, you have twin sons. I have three kids, but they all came out at one time. Not all at the same time. What were some of the challenges that you and your wife have faced having twins?
Oh, twins. Nothing else like it. You got to go through it to actually realize what's going on. I remember the day when she was on the table and they were checking the heartbeat, or so we thought. The doctor looked at me and he went, how do you feel about two? And I looked at him. I went, baby's got two heartbeats. That's bad. That's weird. What do you mean he has two heartbeats?
Right.
No, Mr. Martsoff, you have two babies. My wife and I didn't say a word to each other. We left the office. We got in the car. We were driving. Still haven't even said anything to each other. We were both in shock. We went to a restaurant. I don't remember. It was like a Coco's or something. We sat down and the waitress came out. It was like noon. And I'm like, I'll have a Bloody Mary, please. You know, at least I'll have the same. And then we started talking about it and we both started crying because we were both so freaking scared and nervous about what the heavens have just laid upon us. But through the fear comes some of the greatest things in the world. And I love my experience with twins. I mean, they're built-in playmates, right? Mm-hmm. Day one. two boys, and they just they hug as hard as they hit. You know, I mean, they're right now there's more hitting going on. Like they're on the same water polo team, and it's, but we had some hard times, man. We really, really did. When I was working at Passions, and these kids, there were two of them, and my wife was going nuts, and she was up all night with the industrial milker, not the one from Babies R Us.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the machine that they put on cows. Yeah. The Babies R Us one goes like this. Zzz, 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 zzz. The one my wife had was there was a factory going on. Yeah. And God bless her, man. She just did such a great job. And when I met her, she was this dancer. Right. She was this fly by the seat of her pants living in L.A. She used to dance around with Paula Abdul and Jennifer Lopez back in the day when dance gigs were all over the place, and just woo, cowboy boots, you know, a little short, just going to dance calls. I'm like, I'm in love with this girl. And we ended up falling in love, and then we had kids. And I'm like, is she going to be able to be a mom? Like, I don't know. And wow, you got to be careful how you judge people.
Sure.
She has knocked it out of the park, and she is full on mom. And you know,
it's like amazing.
You're not sure how you're going to do. And then they just kill it.
I went through that same, Chrissy, she's like, you know, I'm sure she went through that same thing, but she just like naturally went right to becoming a mom. It's an instinctual thing, I think, 100%.
It's so beautiful to see, too. I mean,
it is. It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm the one that was like on the side of the bed crying. I was like, I don't know. I'm not supposed to do. How do I change the diaper?
I'm going to break its neck. You're not going to break its neck. It's actually stronger than you are. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not even connected. Eric, can you bathe the baby? Bathe the baby? No.
How are we going to do that? I remember the first time we bathed our son, and we were like, well, let's do it together in the sink. Did you have one of those moments?
I'll be honest with you. I was like, I signed over every one of my Passions checks to this wonderful night nurse named Vanya.
Oh.
She actually took care of the Edges kids, I believe, from U2. I paid this woman. I was like, I want you. You seem to really know what you're doing. And Lisa was like, she's really expensive. I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to give her all my money for the next 2 months. And she really helped us through the whole twin thing, you know,
because that's one baby alone is a huge undertaking, but having two at the same time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, and they tag team, man. And the nurses all told us the best thing you can do is make sure they have the same schedule, that they sleep at the same time.
And were you able to do that?
Mason would scream for 3 hours. And then when he was tired, he'd like tag team his brother. His brother would get him and he'd start screaming. Like it was as if they had a system just to tick me off, you know, but we got through it. We got through it in spades. Yeah. And now we love them and we're good. And our relationship is healthy. We have our trials and tribulations, but life is good. Life is not bad. Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah. It's beautiful, man. And thank you. You know, as long as I've known you, you've always seemed like a very happy person overall. If Eric's having a rough day, which we all have, you know, now and then, what are some of the ways that you or mechanisms that you use to cheer yourself up?
Good question, man. Well, as we were, you know, hinting at before, I've had a really rough year. Losing my parents, COVID, you name it. It's been a tough one. So I've really had to school myself and how to pick myself up when you just want to be down. You just want to swim in a pool of despair and not really do anything. And you try to motivate yourself to go in the garage and do a push up or two, and you just don't want to. And yeah, you know, you go to work and you're like, what's the point? What's the point? You know, we're here for a little time on this planet and we're gone. And I've really had a lesson in making every minute count, man. And just learning to appreciate the time that you have. And once you find that appreciation and realize what little time we got here, you realize if I'm not laughing, I'm wasting my time. If I'm not having some kind of smile and some kind of you got to dig for it sometimes, but that's what it's all about, is the memories and the good times.
Yeah.
And you have to make those happen. You have to go out of your way to make those memories. And it's not about money. It's not about your house and how big it is. And, you know, I've not had money and I've had money. I'll tell you, there's not a big difference in it. But the difference is making the most out of every freaking minute you got. And I'm just in that zone, obviously, because of the events that have come down on me recently. So I put on music, and my music tastes are as varied as, you know, I'll put on Metallica, I'll put on Frank Sinatra, I'll put on Barry Manilow, I'll put on Rick Springfield, I'll put on, you know, UB40, I don't, whatever. We always have music in our house. Music is our language. I'm looking at a Sonos speaker, right? We have like 20 Sonos speakers in every freaking room. And that's kind of our language of our family. So music is important, but more important than music is the reminder that don't sweat the small stuff, because a lot of it is small stuff when you think about it.
Yeah.
So don't waste any time. Go out there and have a good time.
Yeah.
I think that's why I go to events too. Honestly,
well, I was just going to say that, because, you know, if anybody who hasn't met you, you give 150% every time you meet people. I mean, you're absolutely an amazing human being, first of all, that has that capability. And, you know, we've been in this business for a while, and I've done my fair share of personal events and, you know, appearances and whatnot. And sometimes it's hard to put yourself out there in that aspect and make everybody feel joy for being there. But you undoubtedly are always just that guy.
I appreciate you saying that. I don't do it out of charity most of the time. I mean, I love charity, the charitable aspects of those things, but I got selfish reasons for doing those events too. As exhausting as they are, they're exhausting. I always fly home on that airplane with kind of just a glow, just a feeling of, yeah. And that was fun. That was amazing. That was a lot of laughter. That was, and people telling their stories about how, oh my God, I was in the hospital and the only thing I looked forward to was your show at 1 o'clock. And as the nurses are putting needles on me, or I'm getting chemotherapy, or I'm doing that, the only thing I look forward to was that freaking hour of watching Brady Black just do something stupid. So, I'm like, wow, like it makes a difference. Mm-hmm. What we do can actually make a big difference, because it can. Really can, you know, it can, our shows affect people's lives. It can lift them up and make them feel better. So yeah, that's a great reason to go to those events.
Yeah. Well, we're in their lives Monday through Friday, you know, when you're working, and they just feel that connection to you, whether they know you or they don't know you, they instinctively already feel this bond for you. And they always vocalize it in many variations.
They're not afraid to vocalize it, that's for sure. They're very appreciative, and I just feel good. I'm tired, dude. I'm tired, and it's getting harder to make these treks out to wherever the heck I'm
wherever
going. I'll be in Montreal not this week, the following weekend.
Oh, great.
Brian DiTillo and I are having a birthday bash. He turned 50 a couple of days after I did.
Wow. Has there been any obstacles, you think, turning 50? Because my friend says, you know, 50 is the new 30, right?
If there are any obstacles, man, they're on your freaking head. I went through some moments the day I turned 50, some emotional stuff where I was like, oh God, my Christmases are numbered. You start thinking about the years you have left as opposed to the years before you had. But no, the bottom line is you're as old as you feel. I know 27-year-olds that are walking through the studio going, I'm so tired. So tiny coffee. I'm so they're like a shadow of my energy. And I'm like, I'm 50. You're as old as you feel.
Yeah,
that's right. Don't age is a number. I truly believe that. Don't let it get you down.
Yeah, I've got a birthday coming up as well, and I still feel the same as I did when I was 30.
Which one?
Well, I'm 42. I'm going to be turning 42. I don't look as good as you do. I mean, you obviously you have had some gene therapy. So all my guests, Eric, they go through the Jacob Young time machine. And yeah, I do. I have a time machine, just so you know.
You and Orson Welles, that's awesome.
Your sons are now 15. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give 15-year-old Eric?
I'm familiar with your podcast, and I know that you do ask this question. I didn't really think about it, so this is a fresh answer. I'm not a believer in regrets. I'm not a believer in, damn it, if I would only, because I truly believe what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I love hanging out with actors that have struggled. Those are my favorite people. The ones that didn't get it right away. The ones that catered, and freaking, had to work as a bartender for years and just did the grunt work before they got their break. I always feel those are my people. I would definitely tell him to not sweat the small stuff, as we referred to earlier. I think we all spend a lot of time in our youth making just mountains out of anthills, whatever the problem is, whatever the dilemma is. I'd also tell him to not worry about how many friends he has, but worry about the quality of the circle that he has. You don't need 100 people to like you. You need one, maybe two, maybe three good amigos to have your back. To get your ass back from the airport, you just need one good friend that's going to go, I'll pick you up, man. And I think back in the day in school, I wanted to be loved and liked by everybody. I had my hat in a lot of things. I was the glee guy. I was on the football team, but I was also in jazz band. I was in the choir, but I was also on varsity soccer. I was the guy that bled into the different areas of high school. And I still kind of lead my life that way. I think it's important to taste all the things that life has to offer. You don't necessarily have to be, the Joe DiMaggio of everything that you do, but try everything and give it a taste. And there's a reason why Baskin Robbins has all those flavors,
Yeah.
Don't just eat out of one tub. So I don't know if that answered your question, but in summary, I guess I would tell him just to take it easy. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. It's all going to work out.
Don't rush it.
You're doing great. Yeah. Just take it. Don't rush it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in such a hurry to grow up. And now that I'm 50, I'm like, damn, I'm an adult now. I got to be responsible.
Yeah. I wish I would. That's one thing I would tell myself too, is just don't rush it. Take your time. It's all going to unfold the way it's going to unfold. And there's nothing, you can influence things, but you can't change what is God's given moment. It's your fate that's there. And I just wish I would have enjoyed it a little bit more instead of like just trying to push it so fast.
But it's like, it's much like acting. We're taught in classes, like trust the process.
Yeah.
How about in life? Trust the process. Yeah, but I failed at this. Trust the process. Like there might be a reason why that didn't come to fruition. Maybe there's something that's going to manifest on the other side. And it's a tough thing for a youngster to grasp. Like my boys right now, like they just won their water polo game tonight. Right. Oh, they won. They killed it. They get out of the pool and I'm hugging them. And both of them are just mad, just upset because they're focusing on maybe two little things. Like he had one shot that hit the bar and he's focused on that one shot. And he also scored 5 goals and like made these defensive plays, like did all this other great stuff.
But it was the mistakes because they want to be flawless.
Yeah. And you can't be. There's no such thing. The beauty of humanity is that we are fallible, that we learn from our mistakes. Yeah. Perfect is boring. Who the hell wants to hang out with it? I like circus folk. I like people that are just outside of the box and aren't afraid to be themselves. And put me in a room with those people.
Yeah.
I don't want normal. Give me crazy, man.
My sponsor, Boys Town, inherited a motto that's he ain't heavy, he's my brother.
One of my favorite tunes, dude.
Great tune. And meaning in our lives, we've always had or have had at some point in our lives, someone who's carried us, who's carried you.
Who's carried me? My dad and my mom carried me. They gave me the freedom to do what I wanted to do, even when it was scary as hell. My mom dropped me off in the middle of Queens after a Grateful Dead concert, of all things, because she knew I wanted to do this thing in New York. And she dropped me off in this apartment and she left me and she was crying, and she got in a taxi and went back to the airport. And I knew how much it hurt her. But if she hadn't done that, I wouldn't be where I am today. So she took a chance on her son and just went, okay, love you. You know, see you soon. Yeah. They are a big reason why I do what I do today. I don't know where I'd probably be in a cubicle somewhere solving other people's problems. I probably would have been a pretty good lawyer. And I like to argue. But I don't know if I would have been as happy as I am today and as blessed as I am to have the livelihood that I have right now and doing what I love to do. Dude, I look forward to Monday morning. There's another thing my dad always said. He's like, tell you what, Eric, if you can make a living and you look forward to Monday morning, stick with that. Do that. He's like, Eric, I don't think I've ever looked forward to Monday morning in my life. And that resonates with me because I look forward to going to that studio.
Yeah.
And doing my little skit.
Yeah.
And hanging out with those crazy people and going home, and I feel good about what I did. And life is gravy right now. It's pretty darn good.
Well, that's beautiful. And
he's my brother.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm meeting my brother Saturday. I'm flying to Pennsylvania, and my brother and I are going to go through our childhood home where we were raised. And we're going to most likely gonna sell it. But we have to go through it and take what we want out of it. And it's going to be probably one of the hardest weeks of my life next week. Being there, I'm going to stay there. I'm going to sleep there with him. We're going to hang out. We're going to make our last and final memories in that home that we were brought up in. But I'd say, but speaking of brothers, I've never been closer to my brother as a result of these circumstances that I've gone through. And we are so tight as a result. It's a shame that sometimes tragedy is the one thing that glues people together, finally makes people realize, you know, God, I love you. And we've always been good, but now we are just tight and we're going to do this together. And I'm sure that resonates with what you do with your charity.
Well, ultimately, that's probably what your parents wanted too.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. They'd be so happy. They're sitting on a cloud. They're going to watch us just, you know, fight over the pinball machine and stuff.
wait, there's a pinball machine involved here?
Oh, yeah. There's a classic 80s pinball machine in the basement.
Oh, sweet.
And we are probably going to wrestle over that, or I don't know, you know.
Just do an old-fashioned arm wrestling match. Just go for it.
It's going to be something physical. It's not going to be like a paper, rock, scissors deal. It's like a pinball
machine. Or the Indian wrestle. Back in the day, did you ever do that with the legs? One, two, three.
With the legs. Oh, no, I'd probably take him definitely on the leg, but I don't know. We'll see.
Well,
I don't know how the hell I'm going to get that thing to LA, but I'm going to try.
Well, I'll meet you out there. I'll come get the truck. And
Yeah, I need a pickup truck. Would you mind?
Yeah.
Short little jaunt to Pennsylvania.
Well, Eric, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. And of course, to our fans who are just going to absolutely love this candid discussion that we had. And it's so great catching up with you. I also want to say just to remind all you fans out there, they can see you performing live on stage October 15th through the 24th in Mamma Mia. Guys, Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia.
See, you already. Performing Arts Center in Thousand Oaks, California. There's also a special fan event on October 22nd after the show. Can you tell our listeners where they can find all that information to get their tickets to see Mamma Mia and all your up and coming fan events?
Mamma Mia, you can probably find that fivestartheatricals.com. That's in Thousand Oaks. If you're interested in the after party, Star Image Entertainment, check them out on any social platform. I want to throw out that I'm going to be doing Samantha's Friends, which I've been affiliated for 13 years to benefit Southeastern Guide Dogs. Great people. I'm going to be doing that September 25th. Check out Samantha's Friends. And Starstruck Fan Events is doing Atlanta. And we will be there October 9th and 10th. We're doing a little Halloween thing.
Where in Atlanta?
And I, we put up a little video recently. You know, just check it out. It's all over the place right now. But I love the events, man. I encourage people to come out. If you love soaps and you love your actors on these shows, there's no better way to get to meet them and to have some one-on-one time. Like, you know, I've done events with you, dude, and we're so accessible, you know, and the people that do these events are good folks.
Yeah.
And come on out and say hi, and we'll hug you. We'll give you as much COVID hug as we can, you know, and
yeah,
whatever that is. But Jacob, I appreciate the time, man. I've admired you for a long time. I think your career is awesome, and what you're doing right now is terrific. And heck, I might see you in Nashville one day. My wife is itching to move to Nashville.
Well, I call my wife Mama. Good. I call her all the time. In fact, some kids I was taking out the trash, like a domestic guy does, taking out the trash today, and like these kids were rolling by with their bikes and. And I was like, oh, hi, how are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And they were going by. And then my wife was walking out and they didn't see her. And I was like, hey, Mama. And they looked at me. They're like, what? And the kid looks at his sister and is like, did he just call you Mama? And I'm like, oh, my God, their parents are going to say they got it. Like, it was like doing something inappropriate.
Right. What's up, Mama? I mean, yeah, it's appropriate in certain, certain rooms of the house, but definitely not when you're taking the trash out.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, thank you, Eric, man. I appreciate you, and I know everybody out there appreciates you. So I look forward to seeing that beautiful Fatia in person soon. And thanks for joining me again on Real Conversations.
Jacob, my pleasure, man. Thanks, buddy.
Tired of the same old boring popcorn? Want to try something that's delicious and different? If you're like me, sometimes I like a little sweet and salty. Well, Snack Pops did it again with Candy Pop with M&Ms and Cookie Pop with Oreos. Make Candy Pop and Cookie Pop your family's go-to movie snack or enjoy on the go. One bite is never enough. Now available at Publix grocery stores or simply go to snackpop.com and discover the entire line of these tasty popcorn treats. Lane Frost Brand is a proud sponsor of Real Conversations with Jacob Young, the comfortable, stylish, and unique clothing line that commemorates the life of world champion bull rider Lane Frost. Everything from hats to belt buckles. Be sure to check out the whole line of products for the entire family at lanefrost.com. The official shop of the legend for the champion in you. I'd now like to bring on my friend and the manager of the Boys Town National Hotline and our resident professional, Chris Hallstrom. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Jacob?
I'm doing well. I had such a nice conversation with Eric. He's such an uplifting spirit, and he's the kind of person that you want to have around you because he makes you feel good. He always has a compliment. I guess probably when I first met him years ago, I was like, this guy can't be for real. You know, no guy compliments other guys and he can't be that happy about it. He must be pulling my leg or something. But no, that's genuinely his character. And it hurt me to hear that he lost both of his parents this last year. And on top of it with COVID. And we haven't really talked much about death on the show and those kind of things that I'm sure you've had people that on the hotline, kids, people that have lost parents. And what are some of the things that you would help them to understand how to cope?
Well, I think one of the things it was interesting, and I appreciated listening to Eric talk about his perspective, how things have changed, with he's realizing that life isn't going to last forever. And to make every day count, don't sweat the small stuff. I mean, that's not something that I would say if a kid contacted us about it. There's so much to deal with when it comes to losing somebody to death. I mean, there's all the different stages of grief. And if people aren't familiar with that, I encourage people to read about that ahead of time. Because when you're in the grief process, sometimes you think you're going a little crazy because you're in and out of all these feelings. You're angry, you're denying it, you're sad, you're searching for things, memories. It your head's kind of going all over the place. And we actually, on Your Life, Your Voice, on our website for teens, we have a tip that talks about dealing with grief. And I think it's a good thing for people to read. Because you do just kind of get in your head and it makes you look at things very differently. And you could tell Eric's kind of in that place too.
Yeah, it's certainly an eye-opening experience. I remember I was a sophomore in high school and my stepmom, she committed suicide. And I remember almost textbook how I was going through all of those emotions, unaware of what the grieving right. process was. But when I was at the funeral, there was in one of the rooms was a one page about you have the right to feel this. You have the right to feel. I can't quote it, but it was really eye opening because I felt like maybe I was crying too much. You know, maybe right. I was hurting too much. Uh-huh. You know, and am I supposed to be tough? But you know, it was very fleeting for me. So it was interesting. And I have now, of course, over the years and gone through that grieving process. It's okay. It's okay to feel all those things and go through that. I think a lot of times we really don't know how to, we don't know when anything like that's ever going to happen, but it's that grieving process is so important.
Right. Well, and you don't know what you're going to feel until you're in that moment either. Everybody's different and it's okay. And for you, when you talk about your mom passing away through suicide, like that's a whole nother layer of issues and feelings that you're going through. So Eric was a good role model. And I'm a firm believer in looking at how other people do things and learning from them and just some of the things that he talked about with appreciate what you have, because we're not here forever. We're really not. And the fact that they're going to clean up their childhood home and that he and his brother have gotten closer as a result. And, you know, again, we've all experienced or seen other people experience grief. And to me, that's something to aspire to not be fighting about things. How can we approach things with grace with each other and empathy and understanding? Because grief is a difficult process and very tiring. Yeah. And just those emotions are just right there under the surface a lot of times. And sometimes they come out in different ways. So I appreciated some of the things he said.
Yeah. And the fact that, his brother and him are in the same boat now and they right. weren't seeing eye to eye for all these years. And suddenly it takes a moment in time like this to make you realize just how important life is. And right. all of those moments that he may have missed with his brother and his family. And now they're coming together to, like you said, clean out their childhood home. And I can only imagine, I mean, it must to see all the trinkets and odds and ends and things that you grew up with and how important it was to your mom or your dad. And I would imagine there's probably almost a sense of closure too after that whole yes. process is done. How important is that too?
Well, and I can very well speak from experience with that. What's interesting is when those people are gone, like you kind of want those token things that remind you of them. But it's typically, it's not about the value. It's not, oh, I want that crystal vase because that, you know, is worth tons of, and that I'd rather have the casserole that my mom used to make goulash in or whatever, you know? And you realize they're just things, and we all accumulate things, but when we leave this earth, those things aren't going with us.
Yeah.
So you do get a whole different perspective on life. And I kind of go through my house every few years and think, okay, I need to start getting rid of some of this stuff because someday my kids are going to have to clean it all out. So it's definitely closure, and you realize it's just stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we all walk through that door and finish this life, we're not taking any of those material things with us. So
no, but it, you know, like you said, it is important. There are certain things and that have a nostalgia to it.
Yes. The memories that are attached, and we talked about memories too. So
yeah. And embracing all those memories. Yeah. It seems like he's walked that road that we all dread,
right. You know,
and he's successfully overcoming that challenge in his life. And I loved his words of inspiration. All in all, just very inspiring, Eric.
Yeah. Well, and even that he is concerned about what he can do to make a difference in other people's lives. And he was just, it was a very nice interview. Something that could have been very sad. While it was sad, I just think that he sounded like he really has his head on his shoulders and he's working through all of it. So,
well, I want to thank you, Chris, for your words of inspiration every time that we're together. And
I always look forward to hearing who you're talking to and the story that they share. So
a wholehearted thank you. Well, that's about all the time that we have for today. Real Conversations with Jacob Young, the mental health podcast, is sponsored by Boys Town. And at Boys Town, their slogan is, "He ain't heavy, he's my brother." For over 100 years, Boys Town has been saving children, healing families. They're only one call away, and they're always there to help. Please go to boystown.org for all the details on how to access Boys Town's health services, or simply go to yourlifeyourvoice.org. If you're in crisis or need immediate help, please call the trained counselors at the Boys Town National Hotline at 800-448-3000. Again, that number is 800-448-3000. Or text VOICE to 20121. Thanks for joining me on Real Conversations. I'm Jacob Young. Until next time, love yourself and love each other.